Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Buffet, and today's date is February the 9th, 2023. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as a blueprint for self-reliance, for economic self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with the increasing market share for African-American-owned solar renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically colleges and universities. Do you utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally? Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you also know, if you join us on a regular basis, that this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you're listening to that initiative through the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming Facebook, Twitter, and Link. Also, you know, if you join us on a regular basis, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you need to get in contact with yours truly, you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad before calling our call-in number, because you'll be in our green room and we want to bring you right into our living room so we can have this interesting discussion on our leading topic, lead-off topic for discussion today, increasing Black business participation in the clean energy and economic and imperative and opportunity. Now, we don't have a scheduled guest, ladies and gentlemen, for today's show, but we do have definitely some very, very informative and provocative subject matter, which we will be bringing to you as we normally do here over this platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, we were blessed to be able to participate in this webinar which was hosted with the African American Alliance and CDFIs. Now, most of our community are not familiar with the term CDFIs. And CDFIs, they are a registered, and they're called Community Development Financial Institutions. Now, they have a number of different purposes that they serve nationally. Community Development Financial Institutions, they provide, they set an institution, they set up a fund, and they basically do, ladies and gentlemen, is provide opportunities for community development institutions play an important role in generating economic growth and opportunity in some of our nation's most distressed communities by offering tailored resources and innovative programs that invest federal dollars along with private sector capital. The CDFI services mission-driven financial institutions that take a market-based approach to supporting economically disadvantaged communities. Now, when you learn about CDFIs, funds, programs, and their institutions, you have first step in accessing many of the CDS funds programs is applying for the CDFI and the CDE certification. Although there are some expectations, certification is a gateway to access CDFI funds and awards. Programs, CDFI funds award programs encourage economically and community development in low and income distressed communities across the country. Now, you have Bank Enterprise Award Program. The BEA program provides awards to FDIC insured institutions for eligible investments. CDFI bond guarantee programs is a source of long-term, what they call, patient capital for CDFIs. CDFI's Equitable Recovery Program provides grants to CDFIs to respond to disproportionate economic input packs such as things like COVID pandemic. CDFI programs provides financial and technical assistance awards to CDFIs. All of these things played out, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the CDFI Rapid Response Program designed to quickly deploy, such as during the COVID pandemic, capital building initiatives and capacity building initiatives is a source of training and technical assistance for CDFIs. So magnet funds encourages the development of affordable housing in low-income communities. Native initiatives provides awards, training, and technical assistance providing Native communities. New market tax credit programs make tax credit encourage economic and community growth in low-income. Small dollar loan programs was created to help CDFIs provide alternatives to high-cost small dollar loans. Now, training and technical assistance through CDFIs capital building initiatives offer a variety of training and direct technical assistance and opportunities, looking to strengthen their organization and ultimately serve distressed communities in new innovative ways. Training programs offered through capital building initiatives targeted affecting CDFI support deployment, tailored capacity building to meet a unique need for individualized organizations. Building Native CDFI Sustainability and Impact. Sustainability is an impact to multifaceted training programs to include a series of webinars, workshops, and learning cadres designed to strengthen capacity at CDFIs to provide essential financial products and services to Native communities. Access for all, expanding CFIs impact the disability of the community. Now, this information that I have just laid out to you about a number of things that go on that are sponsored by CDFIs. They are all registered through the U.S. Treasury Department. In May of 2020, the Community Development Financial Institution Fund requested public comment on applications and reporting requirements for certified community development institutions. Now, you have CDFIs and you have community development corporations that we find a lot in the African-American community, like the Anacostia Community Development Corporation, located over where the big chair is for those people who live in the DMV market area in Washington, D.C. They know where Martin Luther King Avenue is, and the big chair that sits there with the building Anacostia Economic Development Corporation is located. Now, we have been very, very busy, ladies and gentlemen, in looking at what these CDFI programs are providing to the African-American community. And as we indicated, as we started our show today, how CDFIs play a very important role. Now, this particular webinar series that was started yesterday, as I indicated, is a collaboration with the African American Alliance of CDFIs, CEO's Emerald Cities Collaborative, which is headed by Dr. Denise Fairchild, who has just turned the mantle over to another young lady who I will be able to research her name and give that to you very shortly. Prosperity Now and the U.S. Department of Energy, they partnered to deliver a high-impact, timely two-part webinar series. Now, this webinar series will, the first webinar was held yesterday, which I was a participant as a listening to the webinar, and the next one will be on March 8th. First one was, of course, yesterday, February the 8th, and the time on this is Pacific time, 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is 1 to 3 p.m. If the webinar invite went on to say, hear from CDFI leaders of color, green financing experts, and government leaders about a variety of financial services and opportunities and how your organization can access them and share them with your clients and communities. The African American Alliance of CDFI CEO, Emerald Cities Collaborative, Prosperity Now partnered to deliver a high-impact, timely two-part series. The series is designed to participate in Black-led community development finance institutions and entrepreneurial-serving organizations, ESOs, and clean energy space. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when you begin to look at this and trying to tie this in to the clean energy space, you're going to be in for a rude awakening, which this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact, we've been talking about these issues for the last 6 years we've been on the airways. There was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Donald Baird who participated, who is based out of New York, and we are were very, very happy that Mr. Baird participated, Mr. Donnell Baird participated on yesterday as one of the participants who get guests on the platform, because as the Black Eagle used to say, Joe Madison, if most of them say, he made it plain so the goats could definitely get it. You know, very, very, very plain where the goats could get it. And he broke down the fact that he was just here in Washington, D.C., and he was talking with a member of Congress, chief of staff, concerning the issues of concern as it relates to getting the 40% that Biden has laid out concerning just this 40 initiative as it relates to communities of color. But what we were talking about is not the issue of communities of color. We wanted to know what is available for the American community. Now, Mr. Donald Baird, he's chief executive officer of Block Power. Donald grew up in Brooklyn, New York, sharing a one-bedroom apartment with his family and four that was heated in the winter with gas cooking stove. As an adult, Baird has dedicated his career to addressing inequities he saw and experienced as a child, including as an organizer on Barack Obama's presidential campaign. And in the Obama administration, where Baird worked to expand access to green energy jobs, in 2013, Baird launched the Block Power, a startup that markets, finances, and installs solar energy efficiency technology in city buildings, and installs solar and energy efficient technology in city buildings. Critical Block Power also trains and hires local vulnerable populations to do the green retrofitting, which include installing smart, low-cost sensors, thermostats, and updating heating and cooling systems. To date, the company has completed energy projects in nearly 1,000 buildings, helping small businesses, residential building, housing, houses of worship, and nonprofits 20 to 40% of their energy bill each year. Today, Block Power is helping communities harness the power of green buildings to confront high crisis of our time. As Beard explains, clean energy efficiency buildings improve air quality, reduce the rate of respiratory illnesses, which is a comrade of COVID-19, create jobs, respiratory illness, which is a comrade of COVID-19, create jobs, slash energy costs, and reduce economic inequality. The challenges of climate change, economic recovery, public health, and racial equity are all intertwined, Beard said. Green building technologies offered scalable solutions for them. Can we do? Now, this is a climate reality project, which, you know, this brother here has been on the warpath for a while. I have quite a bit of respect for this young brother as president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. Now, when you begin to drill down and look at block by block, he aims to fight injustice and save the planet. This was in an article that appeared in the Washington Post on March 26, 2021. And there's quite a bit of information on the block organization. We're going to play a few videos.
Hey, Mike.
That's Donnell.
Yeah,
Mike,
when you were chatting with you. Yeah. I met Donnell at the Aspen Ideas Climate Gathering. The event brings together scientists, innovators, and corporate leaders to find solutions to our climate crisis.
Donnell, for anyone who wants to talk about your present, they have to know something about your past. Can you tell us your childhood story and how that perhaps changed the trajectory of your life?
Yeah, well, glad to be here. One of the most interesting things about my childhood is when my parents moved from Guyana in South America to Brooklyn, they moved into an apartment building that didn't have a working heating system. So even when it would be freezing cold during the winter, we didn't have heat. And so we and all our neighbors used our gas oven to heat our apartment at night. And we would turn on the gas, open up the oven door, and then open up the window to release the toxic chemicals to the outside world. And so pretty early on, I was introduced to the intersection of kind of energy poverty and health. Manage the relationship. So,
and those two words, energy poverty, we don't hear them very often, but it's out there, right?
It's out there. And I mean, you all talk to a global audience. I've had the chance to, you know, travel in India and Istanbul and Brazil, and energy poverty is a real thing. And one of the things that our generation has to figure out is there's going to be hundreds of millions of people around the world who are going to need energy for their families, to purify water, for heating, for air conditioning, all over the world, middle class, China, emerging middle class in India. As people move from energy poverty to having energy access, what does that mean for climate change, and how do we navigate that transition?
Donnell's startup, Block Power, upgrades buildings so that they are greener and cleaner for the environment. Previously, he was a voter contact director for the Obama for America campaign. He also managed a national project that used financing from the U.S. Department of Energy to create green construction jobs for out-of-work populations.
Block Power, how did it come about, and how do you get an idea like that? Because it's fantastic, and you can explain it to people, but I mean, to me, that's one of the things that's really fantastic about it is, like, here's, like, this is such a great idea, and combining all the elements of it, how did it come to you?
Well, we started developing Block Power as part of a process. I actually was a senior staffer for Barack Obama's presidential campaign, his first one, and I didn't think he was going to win, but he won. And when he did, they said that I could, like, move to D.C. and do that whole thing, but I didn't want to. I'd met my wife, and she was in New York, so I wanted to be in New York. And so they offered me an opportunity to create green jobs, which is something that I've been focused on when I graduated from college, focused on economic empowerment for financially underserved communities, and focused on climate change, which I learned about in college, and wanted to work at that intersection of creating jobs for low-income families to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So that was my thing. And so they offered me a role as a consultant to the U.S. Department of Energy. This is the green building component of the 2009 Obama-Biden stimulus, where we invested $6.5 billion in trying to green buildings across America. And some some of it worked and some of it didn't. And 12 years later, here I am still trying to make greening buildings across America work. So I was introduced to the industry and the challenges and opportunities of greening buildings at that time. And after thinking about the problem for about a decade, we came up with the idea of turning buildings into Teslas, which is what we do, that just like Tesla rips out the fossil fuel engine out of automobiles and replaces it with a smart, modern, all-electric engine, can now rip out fossil fuel heating, cooling, cooking equipment out of buildings and replace it with all-electric, green, healthy, smart, modern, electric equipment. So we can do that for buildings all over across America. We can do buildings all over the world. That will reduce global greenhouse gas emissions by over 30%. The interesting thing, though, is the first car I ever drove was a 1970 Maverick, which I'm sure is somewhere rotting right now. Elon Musk is not tasked with turning that 1970 Maverick into a Tesla, but you sort of are. You're taking some of these buildings that are maybe even Ramblers or Model Ts and turning them into Teslas. That's no small task, is it? It's a great analogy. It's really apt, and it's not a small task. If we're smart about it, if you think through, to stick with your analogy, all right, well, you got a Model T or a Rambler or a Dodge Dart, what size engine does each of those types of cars need? What electric engine makes sense for each of those cars? And what kind of installation processes would you need to train workers on in order to rehab those vehicles so that you can convert them to all electric? That's what we do for building. And we've been really fortunate that Jeff Bezos gave us a climate philanthropy grant to build a software tool that allows us to scrape data on 125 million buildings across America so that we can identify the type of building that each of these buildings is and assign and decide and analyze what kind of all-electric equipment makes sense for each building type. So whether you're in an apartment building or a church or a synagogue or a mosque or a school or a ranch-style home or a Victorian single-family home, we can figure out by the age and type of your building what kind of decarbonization and all-electric equipment is appropriate and makes sense for your building. So that's what my company does. And then if you need to borrow some money, do the project, then we'll lend you the capital as well. Some neighborhoods within an urban area become much warmer than their surroundings due to absorbing and re-emitting the sun's heat. Green rooftops can be an effective solution to urban heat islands. A rooftop walk across Rotterdam hopes to show the future of the city. Green rooftops can take many shapes. Lush gardens, solar panels, urban farms, and community spaces painted in light colors that absorb less sunlight. This can help combat problems inside the cities.
You know what's interesting about your world, though? It seems like you have one foot in the real world because you're going to some of these underserved communities that really need help. And then one foot in the dream world where you go out to the Silicon Valley to raise money and these sort of like the big dreamers and they've been creating, you know, these high-tech companies and making tons and tons of money. Can you talk about navigating both? Because that's got to be a really interesting perspective. One day you're here and you're just seeing, you know, income inequality, and then you're going and you're seeing income inequality on another level.
There are moments where I'm in Menlo Park in Silicon Valley. I remember I was at some barbecue and I turned around and there was Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg, and then to my right was Peter Thiel and then Kim Kardashian and Kanye. You are in this crazy dream world environment. And sometimes you are at the top of Mount Olympus. We have some of the best investors in the world. We're really proud of that. We're proud that they support our vision. They invest in things like Facebook and Uber and Twitter and Lyft, and they invest in us so that we can figure out how to marry this world of atoms with their world of bits, right? Because we work in the physical world. How do you go into low-income or financially underserved communities that have things like mold and lead and asbestos in the basements surround a 100-year-old heating system that burn oil or gas, right? And so the question is, what are the ways that we can use software in the world of bit to model and simulate the kind of decarbonization and electrification work that we do to make buildings smarter, healthier, greener, safer for all? And how do you use software to solve these real-world construction problems in the world of Adam? So I do have to go from the top of Mount Olympus in Silicon Valley to, like, the basement of a low-income apartment building and put my construction hat on and curse at the site manager to make sure that the project goes well. And so I think not only for me, but for everyone on the Block Power team, our ability to navigate both worlds, and, oh, by the way, to stop at Goldman Sachs on Wall Street and ask them for capital so that we can finance their project from Silicon Valley to Wall Street, to low-income people. We look for staff that can figure out how to navigate those complexities.
And putting on that construction hat and going down there and knowing that you're helping people in these communities, that has to give you the fuel to go, you know, every 3 weeks out to the Silicon Valley and knock on doors and say, hey, we need some more capital, right?
Absolutely. We've been really excited about a new project we have with Mayor Eric Adams in New York City, where we've hired and trained 800 adults from the highest crime communities in New York City, communities that have really high rates of gun violence. And the NYPD and the district attorney, they have statistical models that identify individuals that are likely to be involved in future incidents of gun violence based on their record. And we were asked to train and hire those people and employ them in our clean energy projects in New York City. So we've done that for the last 6 months. We've trained and hired hundreds and hundreds of folks from hundreds and hundreds of New York families that are low income. And there's been some amazing stories, you know, someone who was in foster care their entire life, who now has a full-time job at a tech company, someone who was locked up, incarcerated for 17 years, who was reunited with their kids, now has a full-time job installing solar panels. We trained and hired a team of people who'd been incarcerated in Rikers Island, which is the jail in New York City. And we sent them out to Rikers Island, and they put in solar panels on the island, right? And they said, well, the last time I was here, I was locked up myself, or I came to visit my parents who were locked up. But now they're here to do something positive, put clean energy onto Rikers Island and generate clean electricity for surrounding communities and, you know, get paid while doing it. So that kind of work does give us a lot of motivation and makes it easier to navigate the challenges of raising capital in Silicon Valley.
A vast array of solar panels floats on the shimmering waters of a reservoir in northeast Thailand, symbolizing their efforts towards carbon neutrality by 2050. The immense installation, covering 720,000 square meters of water surface, is a hybrid system that converts sunlight to electricity by day and generates hydropower at night.
Going into these communities, it has to bring back memories of your own childhood. So what's it like to go in there to help people who are in these communities, give them jobs? I mean, what's that feeling like?
It's a really great feeling of satisfaction and completion. Every time we complete a project, there's so much happiness on the face of the decision makers in the home, the parents, the grandparents, because the systems actually are really comfortable. And so they actually increase the comfort of homes in addition to reducing costs and reducing greenhouse gas emissions and saving money. And so people are always really excited. And that's part of what keeps me going and gets me up in the morning and gets me to leave my beautiful new newborn baby and go out into the field, because we know that we're helping so many people. Really excited about it.
In France, this coal power plant in Saint-Amand stopped burning fossil fuels after almost two centuries of operation. The power plant will be converted into biomass and a green hydrogen production site. The change should save some of the 87 jobs on site, and the operation should begin in 2024.
The first chief scientist with Apple said the best way to predict the future is to invent it. But it's also you have to invest in it. Have there been hurdles for you going out and trying to convince people this is the road forward? And talk about sustainability, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about climate change here, but sustainability is key moving forward. I mean, it's not just the vision of what a city looks like today. It's how that city looks for your children, you know, as they grow up and for our future.
You know, unfortunately, women and people of color only raise 3% of the total capital that's invested from Silicon Valley. And so, you know, 97% of the money goes to the same old profile of folks, which is a challenge for me as an entrepreneur of color that needs to raise capital from Silicon Valley, but also a challenge, I think, for the human race. If you believe, as I do, that talent and genius is evenly distributed throughout the human population, then we need to be investing in the best innovators from every class, from every community, from every gender, from every color, and we're not doing that right now. So we were subject to these challenges when we raised capital. We've been very fortunate to partner with some of the best investors in the world, K4 Capital, who invested in Uber, Andreessen Horowitz, who invested in Twitter and Airbnb and Lyft, and Goldman Sachs and Microsoft and Salesforce and AmFam. So in some ways, we got lucky. In some ways, we were able to persevere to find like-minded investors who were concerned about their kids and grandkids and wanted to find ways to work with us to bring our solutions and bring the future that we see to reality. And that future is about the long-term sustainability. We can decarbonize transportation. We can decarbonize real estate. We can decarbonize agriculture. We can do those things now. We don't need to invent a whole bunch of new technology. There are places where we will need to invent technology where we scrape, you know, carbon from the sky and find economic, but we will have to invent those things. But there's a lot of things that we can do right now. And so decarbonizing buildings is one of those things that we can do right now. We don't need new technology. We've already invented everything that we need. And so since we can do it, we should do it. I want to talk to you about sustainability, what it means to you, but also the frustration factor that so much of what we see out there in the news is just kind of these ancillary things. But these are key issues that all of us are facing around the globe, and it seems like you have to squeeze in there to get on the agenda in terms of news coverage. How frustrating is it for you, and what are your thoughts on that? And talk a little bit about sustainability and why it's important to chat about it. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. I also find it terrifying. I mean, as a parent of young children, we just had a newborn a few weeks ago. We find what's happening with climate change terrifying. We find the difficulties that you all may run into leading a public conversation around it horrifying. We find the loggerheads and inactivity of the United States Senate, who are trying but struggling to reach a resolution on a national climate agreement so that the United States can help to lead the world, frustrating and terrifying. So I would say that I am afraid. I do have the great privilege of being able to lead a company that has a plan to reduce U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by 30% over the next 7 to 15 years, and it's a credible plan that scientists back. And what it allows us to do is actually transition to longer-term sustainability, not to think about one-off behavior modifications or interventions, think about what does it look like to redesign our economy so that it is more sustainable environmentally, socially, psychologically. What does it look like to think through redesigning our economy, and what does it look like to implement the redesign of our economy while the economy still functions? So I think we're past the point of, you know, having theoretical conversations around, well, what if we did this and what if we do that? We need to put best practices in place and test things out and see what works. We need to make our case to consumers that sustainability is better, not just because it's ethical, not just because we want to save the planet, but because it's healthier. It's healthier for have a gas oven or know someone who does, if you think about your favorite meal, your family holiday meal where you may have folks who are cooking your favorite meal in the oven, well, while they're cooking that favorite meal, methane and nitrogen dioxide is being released into your home. And everyone's breathing that in, and all of your kids and your nieces and nephews and newborns are breathing that in. And that is why the asthma rate, the chronic childhood asthma in America, has spiked. And as China and India and other countries move hundreds of millions of people into the middle class, the public health impact of burning dead plants and animals, fossil fuels, in our homes to cook and provide heating and air conditioning and hot water, the health impacts of that are disastrous. And so sustainability is not just something that we do to feel good about, to feel moral, to feel like we're preserving the future, the planet for future generations. It's better for our health and our longevity and our families. And I think what we're starting to think about is how do you start to tell that story in a way that's more immediate. Certainly any parent that learns that their fossil fuel gas oven is poisoning their kids is going to think twice about, like, well, maybe I can electrify and move to an electric stove, for example, and decarbonize the way that you cook in your kitchen. And so changing and shifting to more sustainable practices is paramount, but as an entrepreneur, we have to make the case to consumers in a way that's compelling and immediate to them. Sustainability is a high priority.
I think you just did it, so we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Donnell. It's been a pleasure. It's good to be here. Nice to be with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just was listening to Donnell Baird, who with Block Power, a very, very dynamic, ingenious African brother who has been doing the work in the field. Now, as we started our show, I'm glad they brought up the fact about the struggle of getting this message out to the African-American community and other communities of color as to what actually goes on, what else is actually happening as it relates to the challenges of combating climate change. Now, we are still looking at the discussion that Mr. Beard laid out yesterday as he explained. He didn't call the name of the congressman or the senator's office or the people at the Department of Energy that he had just met with. But the fact of the matter is, as Biden is running around the country talking about the Justice 40 initiative, with these billions of dollars in tax codes and credits and things that are supposed to be put out the door, they're being undermined by the utility company. What I mean by that, a report was put out by an organization called Mission Data that back last year in 2022, that reported that utility companies across the U.S. have deactivated the data sharing option on 14 million U.S. citizens' PV systems, which are known as solar systems on people's roofs, which takes away the ability of the homeowner to know how much energy that those solar panels are generating when the sun hits those panels. Energy goes down electrical harness into a converter, and it's converted from direct current from the sun to what we call AC, which our utilities operate on in one's home. Well, the fact of the matter is, this is so pervasive here in our nation's capital that yours truly was on a Zoom webinar talking about, you're going to hear it more and more, the term community solar is known as subscription solar, where people who don't live in homes, who live in apartment buildings, can purchase what we would call green credits through a subscription process. Well, the utility companies have also turned off the data sharing option at many of these large apartment complexes, and they're commercial. Here in the District of Columbia, the former U.S. outgoing U.S. Attorney, Mr. Racine, along with the lead general counsel, Ms. Sandra Fry, from the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C., and the Department of Energy and Environment, who gave the local utility, Pepco, almost 3 years to address this issue. They had to file a lawsuit. That lawsuit did not cover individual homeowners participating in the Solar for All program. The Solar for All program in Washington, D.C. was developed when the city passed in 2016 their first renewable portfolio standard legislation, which means by a 2032, 2035, 2040, 2045, 2050, that a certain amount of energy generated in that marketplace must come from a green resource, whether it be hydronetics, wind, nuclear, or solar. But going back to this particular situation, how the legislation was crafted by Mary Shea, who heads the D.C. City Council, who headed the D.C. City Council Department Chair on Environment, that for wind, hydronetics, nuclear, that the local utility company could purchase these energy credits, they're known as green credits, from outside generators. But for solar energy, it must come from the physical landmass of the District of Columbia, which in fact created a shortfall for fiscal year 2017 here in your nation's capital after Mayor Bowser signed into law the first renewable portfolio standard of 2016, which had a 50% mandate. There were hearings held by the D.C. City Council, and I will never forget what Mrs. Sandra Fry, the lead general counsel for the Public Service Commission here in our nation's capital, stated in her testimony. Pepco cannot buy what Pepco cannot get. Pepco at that time in 2018 had around 375,000 customers in your nation's capital with a population of almost 800,000 plus. But the law is written where Pepco must purchase these credits from their customers. When you're looking at homes in D.C., which many of them by architectural design are row, you have some ranch-style homes, but very few of them have large-scale roofs. So when we get to talking about looking at the size of what would be put on, installed on the average home in the District of Columbia, it would be called a 5K system or 5 kilowatt system, which is composed of maybe 10 to 20 panels, depending on the efficiency of those panels as it relates to their quality. Well, the long and short of this situation is in the District of Columbia, because there was a shortfall of $15 million, the president of Pepco in Washington, D.C., Mrs. Donna Cooper, yours truly had the privilege of speaking with her, and she said to me, "Faye, we realize that in Washington, D.C., unless the Mayor Bowser administration is going to spend $50 to $90 million through housing to do rooftop replacement in wards 5, 6, 7, and 8, that the majority of the homeowners in the district are 55 years or older. That means that there are many are retired on fixed income and they cannot replace their roofs. And we need those roofs to have PV systems installed so that we can, in fact, purchase those credits from that residential customer base. We'll never abate this. But when we sat at the table, when this legislation was being crafted, our attorneys negotiated the fact that we are allowed to pass those shortfalls on to our customer base in the form of fees. There was a $15 million shortfall for fiscal year 2017 after the first renewable portfolio standard legislation was signed into law by Mayor Bowser. Pepco wrote the check. They also passed those fees on to the ratepayers. That money goes over to the Public Service Commission, kept in a bank account, and the City Council kept petitioning the Public Service Commission to move $25 million one time. They went back with another $35 million request to move more monies from that fund to the general fund. When the legislation was written that the District of Columbia must assist 100,000 low and moderate income residents in the District of Columbia reduce their energy costs by 50% by year 2032. The fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, is that Betty Ann Kane, who was director of the Public Service Commission at that time, came to bats with the former head of the Department of Energy and Environment in Washington, D.C., Director Tommy Wells, when he came in and requested to be able to pass on and raise $105 million over from 2019 to 2032 in the form of additional fees to be passed, which are passed on to the ratepayers in the District of Columbia to capitalize the Green Bank of Washington, D.C. On top of that, when we look at this program, this Solar for All program, and we look at this fact that you had almost 6,000 people in that program, and the U.S. Attorney's lawsuit covers those, but it leaves out the individual homeowner, churches, and small businesses. The National Association, which I'm president, we have stepped forward, and we have gone to, and we're asking for legal assistance to file a class action suit on behalf of those homeowners, small businesses, and churches that were not included in the filings. Now, this is not a secret, but nobody's talking about it. This is one of the issues, national issues. This is not a District of Columbia issue, but it's a national issue because the energy credits in Washington, D.C. are valued at $375 a kilowatt hour, and they are being traded every day over the commodities market. So with the deactivation of the data sharing option on people's meters, it means that they don't know what their systems are generating. Those credits are being taken by the utility company and sold on the market, and they are making bank. Ladies and gentlemen, brings you this information this plain and make it plain other than this platform, Solar Now and the Future. This is why what Mr. Beard was saying was very, very important. We only have about 5 more minutes left in today's program, so I want to talk about the other members of that particular webinar tomorrow, yesterday, was Nia Young with the Coalition of Green Capital. She spoke about the challenges facing helping low and moderate income communities, and specifically African American communities. We talked about the lack of companies in this space, entrepreneurs in this space. Yours truly has talked about the fact about over in the solar industry, over 11,000 companies doing business. We have less than 40 African American entrepreneurs in this area. Under the EV charging area, we have less than 5 nationally. As a solar manufacturing, I only have heard of one. I don't have the individual African-American who is now manufacturing solar panels in this country. But yet a North Korean country, a company is getting ready to invest $2.5 billion in Dalton, Georgia, to build a large-scale solar manufacturing facility called Qcell, which will be the largest in the Northern Hemisphere. How do we get access to those offices? And Senator Ossoff from Georgia, who brought this deal to the table and black folks vote for them, how do we get his audience, get his attention around this issue? Therefore, the National Association of Blacks and Solar, which I am the president of, we have been calling for congressional hearings. We've reached out to Jennifer Granholms to entertain speaking to all of our African-American renewable energy companies in a webinar concerning what does the Justice 40 initiative really means in the terms of carve-outs, because there have been carve-outs made through the Inflation Reduction Act and Build Back Better. There's nothing for the African-American community. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a power-packed hour. I have laid it and put it out there. I hope that we brought you news that you can definitely use. You want to go to our website at positivechangepc.com. You will see that you'll be able to find out how you can register for the March 8th webinar, the second webinar that they will be bringing forth. You want to find out about Trenton Allen with Sustainable Advisors, Amber Bond, Mrs. Watchin' Bruce, with the CEO of the Baltimore Community Lending Corporation. These were all participants on yesterday's webinar. And as we always say here on this show, we always remember who brings you this show. This show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as an economic blueprint for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities to utilize HBCU campuses and African-American farmlands to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with this economic impact on Black America. And until next week, we always say, we don't want you to meet us here. We want you to beat us back here. As we are closing another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, we highly recommend that you go to our website and click on Clean Energy Tax Resources. We didn't get a chance to get into that today. Information that you heard from Mr. Beard said it all. And without being said, as we said, we don't want you to meet us back here next week. We want you to beat us back here next week as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Singing, why don't you sing it?